I love this song. Think about that last part of that last verse. Give me, Lord, the mind of Jesus. Keep me holy as He is. Is it possible in 2011 that that can be a reality in my life? If we could look back when He gave the Beatitudes, when folks were there able to sit at His feet and listen to Him, I wish I could have been there. Wish we could have done it in person. But it's possible for us to be able to sit at His feet even today, to be able to learn from Him. There is a verse that I'd like for us to think about this afternoon. Philippians 2 and 5 says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. What was the mind of Christ? And is it possible for me to be able to know it today and be able to live in that same way? What things were on Christ's mind? What were His thoughts? There was a verse that He gives us in Matthew 16 and 18. It says, upon this rock, I'm going to build a church, and the gates of hell won't be able to prevail against it. Those were His thoughts. And He had a prophecy that was backing it up from Daniel 2 and 44 that said, in the days of these kings, the God of heaven is going to set up a kingdom. It will never be destroyed. It'll not be left to other people. It's going to break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms. That was what He had to build off of. And He says, upon this rock, I'm going to build my church. So if it were up to you to build a church, we look around us today at mega churches, thousands of people in it. And I think of just the duties that go in keeping just for a few hundred people. What would it be? What would the ones that sit down together to build a church today, what efforts would be put into it? We hear about membership drives. Need people if you're going to have a church. Somebody's going to need to raise some money. Going to have some people that are effective at raising money. Jesus said He was going to build a church, and nothing would be able to destroy it. So when we look around us today at what it takes to build a church, and then we say, we want to sit, Lord, at Your feet, like to receive some instruction from You of what is important. Was it important to Jesus to have numbers? He was not willing that any would perish. He desired that everybody would be saved. But He had an opportunity as He was preparing to build this church. He had an opportunity for numbers. He had an opportunity to be very popular. He was popular. To the point that when He fed the multitude, He had to get out of there because they were going to force Him to become a king. And then we look at that chapter from popularity to no popularity within one chapter in the sixth chapter of John. In fact, it came down to the point. And through this tonight, today, I'd like for us to remember Christ said He's going to build a church. So we're trying to find out what things were important to Him to be able to build it. Because by the time that chapter ended, He was down to asking His disciples. Everybody else is gone. He's down to them and He asks, will you also go away? I'm going to build a church that the gates of hell will not destroy. But numbers was not important to Him. Should the disciples have left Him, He still knew He could build a church that the gates of hell would not destroy. So as I look at that, what instruction? His 12 says, I'll go with you. We're staying with you. So He comes down to time to give them instruction for church building. He has just a very short time left. What instruction would you give? What instruction did He give? Because I think it's real important to us today to be able to find out what was the mind of Christ. I'd like for us to take a look at it. In John, in the 13th chapter, He's coming down to a place where I've got just a few hours left to be able to give My disciples, those few that stuck with Me, to give them some instruction in what's going to be real important to build this church that will not be destroyed. And He starts out here Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of the world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the death. And we go on down in the third verse. Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he's got just a few hours now. If he's got anything more important to tell him of what's going to make a successful church, you better do it now, because you'll soon be gone. And here's what he decided was very important. He rises from supper, laid aside his garments, took a towel, and girded himself. Now, y'all might think, you know what? Hey, wait a minute. We had feet washing a few days ago. But you know, that was an event that was intended to represent something that follows me every day of my life. Did Jesus look at that and say, I'm fixing to be gone in just a few hours now? What's very important, if this church is to continue, that the disciples of it must have clean feet. It had nothing to do with it. He said, there's something that is very important that I need to leave you. And I want to leave you something that will represent it, that you will be reminded of it on a periodical basis. Humility. This represents humility. And why did he feel like it was necessary that that now is the most important thing that I could leave them? Is I need them to know about humility. Because just recently, before that, a mother of two of them had come to him. Said, I got a desire that I'd like for you to grant for my two sons here. Grant that one of them would be on one side of you and one would be on the other side of you in this new kingdom that you're fixing to start. This church that you said won't be destroyed, I'd like for my two sons to be the greatest in it. And we didn't see any place where they say, Mom, why did you say that? Because, and the reason I think that is I go on down just a few verses, and it says there were only 10 that were filled with indignation about that. Two were pretty happy if it would have succeeded. And then I look at the reason humility was really needed, because it made 10 of them mad that they missed out on the opportunity for it. And Jesus has just a very short time. If I don't get something across, if I don't get this lesson across, there'll be no church. I'll be gone and there'll be nothing left. There was another place that tells me how important he saw it to be. I'd like to look in Luke, the 22nd chapter. Because he's coming down to just fitting to leave out. 22:22 says, and truly the Son of Man goeth as it was determined, but woe unto that man by whom he is betrayed. And they began to inquire among themselves which of them it was that should do this thing. That's a good thing for them when he found out that they heard from him that one of them was going to betray him. It's a good thing that they ask, who is it? Is it I that's going to do it? But look at that next verse, right along with this. It says, there was also a strife among them, which of them should be accounted the greatest. At the same time that they're hearing one of you is going to betray me, they were also seeing that we're still concerned about who's going to be the greatest. That's why Jesus said, Jesus felt like, I believe, this is the most important thing that I can pass along. And you know what? I don't believe it's lost its importance for us today. That I would in my life, not just on camp meeting day, because if I were to count up how many times I've come to an ordinance service and did feet washing, it would be a large number. But it was never intended to stop there. It was to be a reminder of me, to me, of how I'm supposed to live the next day. Not just at Monarch, to the people that I'm around, but tomorrow when I go back to work, that I would take that and show it to the world. So I'd like to go to another verse in Philippians, in the 2nd chapter, where it said, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but he made himself of no reputation, and he took upon him the form of a servant. That's what I'd like for us to look at for a little bit this afternoon. The importance that Christ saw in teaching us to take on us the form of a servant. And I want to say something right here. I believe he realized that unless his disciples would get a hold to it, the church would self-destruct. Unless we get a hold to it, I get a hold to it. I'm living in my life every day. It's going to be a hindrance to us. But I want to tell you, it doesn't start at Monarch. Before I practice it at church, I need to master it at home. The place for me to take on the form of a servant is at home. Because you know the world, really, that's the picture they see of the church. He intended that to be the picture that they would see of the church. And I go back to that verse in Ephesians 5 and 25, where it says, husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, and he gave himself for it. If I, in my home, before I ever come to Monarch or any church service, if I have learned humility, learned to take on me the form of a servant, it'll be much easier when I get to meeting. Because I've thought about this. Feet washing just represents something. So I wondered, in my own home, in our homes, maybe we should be doing some feet washing services on a regular basis. And I don't mean shoes and socks. I mean taking on the form of a servant. 34 years ago today, here in Neosho, I got married and made a vow. Maybe we could call that the number one feet washing service there. Because listen to this and see if it sounds like the feet washing service. I, Dan, take you, Cheryl, to be my wife, to live together after God's ordinance and holy bond of marriage, and promise in the presence of God to love you, comfort you, honor and cherish you in sickness and in health, in prosperity and in adversity, forsaking all others, remain faithful as long as we both shall live. You know, sometimes maybe you'd hear that. We hear somebody read those vows, and it sounds like, boy, you really got out on the limb when you said all that. But you know, really, everyone that's married gave a vow almost like that. You know what this thing really says is, he made himself of no reputation. He took upon him the form of a servant. And you know, on that day, and really for many days before that, before I was married, and maybe some others here have not been married so long, but what you can remember it too. Her wish was my command. If I just knew this would make her happy, I would do it. kind of like feet washing service, you know. When I can kneel down and wash your feet, you know, I want you to know I just really care about you. But we get up from there and we go home again. On mine, I made that vow, and I can remember even telling her, we're going to celebrate 25 years without ever having an argument. Well, we'll go on. But good intentions. And you know, when we had our little, our feet washing service there, there are good intentions. That, brother, I want you to know, I want to be your servant. I want to serve you. And we dry off the feet and we go our way. And sometimes we get other opportunities in life to humble ourselves. And if we're not careful, we'll forget it. Kind of like I would do. You know, time passes in a marriage. And where I had said at the beginning, I want to be a servant. Read these vows here, and I'm all for you. You know what? Time can pass, and I get in a frame of mind that, yes, I still want it to be that way, but we're having to kind of watch the budget because she's spending too much on groceries, but I just found a toy that I want to buy. And they don't make them. I mean, that's the only one that's got that bargain to it. It was a motorcycle for me. Tied on the budget for groceries until I saw that motorcycle. And the price was right. And, you know, gas was way up there. It was probably a dollar a gallon or something. And And it's just going, you know, you can come up with so many reasons to justify not taking on the form of a servant. And there's something that goes at the end of that feet washing service that said, if you know these things, happy are you if you do them, not just if you know them. So when I thought about in my home, I could say, you know, this will soon be over. I'll get the motorcycle, and I maybe even we had enough money to buy her something too, and everything will be back to normal again. But you know, it doesn't work that way, because what it says is, I just put on a form when I washed your feet, when I told you that you're number one in my home. It was a form. And when I got up, I showed something different. And maybe it was 5 years before I showed it. And maybe I didn't show it again for a while. But what it does is it lets somebody else know, nope, not number one today anyhow. So the recipe for a happy home, master the art of being a servant. And I want to tell you how it works. Guys, it's going to have to start with us. And you won't be able to say, okay, I'm going to give it a 7-day trial. If it works, I'm willing to serve for 7 days. And then if it doesn't turn around like I wanted it, I'll be back to my old self again. I've got a verse that is the recipe. I believe it's the recipe for my home. It's also the recipe for the church. It says, let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other greater than themselves. If you do these things, if you know these things, happy are you. It's a guarantee it'll come right along with it. Not just in the home, but also in the church. Have you ever, and I know we all have you ever seen two ministers get up at the same time to preach? I had hoped I would never be in that list, but it's happened. And you know, before I started doing this, I always would have the thought, one of them's out of line. Well, now you look at it a little different. You say, Lord, I tried. I thought I knew what you wanted. But I want to tell you something to look for in the future. When two ministers get up at the same time, I want you to get ready for something. You're fixing to see a feet washing service. I've seen it. I've seen it here. I saw it last year, and I don't want to, well, yeah, I do want to give names. Last year at a night service, the call was given for the message, and the wait was long. And I remember Brother Leslie. You know, Brother Leslie will have a message if nobody else will give one. And I remember he reached down, got his Bible, and started raising up. And he said, I've got a message. And he didn't even finish, I've got a message. When he looked up here, and Brother Danny had started raising up. And it just flowed right on through. I've got a message, but you go right ahead, brother. This is taking on the form of a servant. Now, I don't know what message Brother Leslie had for that night. It didn't matter, because he preached me a message that was something that we all need to see throughout our life, is let each esteem other greater than themselves. And I've mentioned this even to Brother Marty. Saw him one time when Brother Marty heads for the pulpit. He's a man on a mission. He had his head down and going. Well, when he got right about here, he saw that Brother Veda was right about here. And you've got to do something. And what he did was just did a spin around and was gone back to his seat. And you couldn't have drug him back out of it. Well, I look at that, and we're in a world where your chance for success is to step on somebody else. That's the only way you're going to get up. And Jesus said, just as he was fixing to breathe his last, I mean, he had very few hours left after this. And he said, the most important thing that I can give my disciples is to wash one another's feet. And only do that, and he says, do it often. Because we're living in a world where the world will take it away from us. So what I would like for us to think about today is not so much the act itself. The act is only to remind me that I've got 364 other days in the year to remember that. When times come for me to raise up and take my own way, for the Lord to be able to tell me, when you're down on your knees washing somebody's feet, there's not a whole lot to say for yourself. Take on the form of a servant. And then there's something else that can happen. Remember the person with the one talent? When we start saying, okay, let each esteem other greater than themselves, that person with the one talent can say, I love that because I didn't want to give anything anyhow. I don't have anything to give that's as good as others can give, so I'll esteem them greater and I won't give. But that's not what he asked for. What he asked for is us to do what the little boy did when he brought the loaves and the fishes. I intended this to just be my lunch, but I tell you what, if it can help out at all, here, take this and do what you will with it. A group effort. Amen. Think about the verse that says, I've planted, Apollos watered, but God gave the increase. It's a group effort. I've thought in the past about people playing basketball with the intent on winning. They're not concerned about, I've got to have the most points. It is, if you're the closest to the basket here, take this on. Because the goal is for the team to win. You remember David when he took the little cheese and bread down to see his brothers? And he saw what was going on, and he came to the point that he said, hey, I tell you, I'm willing to do it. Now, I believe this verse still applied to him, let each esteem other greater than themselves. I believe he would have loved to see his brothers and others take out and say, he's defying the army of God, and he get to watch it happen. But when it didn't, he said, I tell you what, I would be willing. I'll do what I can. Don't have much. And you remember when he was chided by his brother? You just came down here to get to watch this. Well, his brother was probably pretty embarrassed for him to see what was going on anyhow. But he said, I know the naughtiness of your heart. But what David said was, there's something more than that. There's a cause. And when you're playing basketball, if you really want to win, you know, at the end of a game, they will say, this person made the most points. You know, this person got 26 points and everybody else got 10 apiece. Well, you know what? If someone says, I tell you what, I'm going to get the most in the next game. I don't care where I am on the court. I'm going to fire that ball and see if I can get some points. And they'll lose. Because you're not always in the position to be able to make the points, and that's not what we're concerned about anyhow. That's not what Jesus was concerned about. A group effort says, I was able to put the seed in. Somebody else came by and put some water on it. But it was God that gave the increase. Think about the verse in John. I'd like to look at it. In the 13th chapter and in the 34th verse. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. Not just, I've got it for somebody, but I've never gotten it to them. But that I would learn to take on myself the form of a servant. In 2011, when all around us in the world it says, you got rights. Take up for your rights. If you don't, who will? And the Lord says, take on the form of a servant, because we will, all of us, whether it's at home. And I'd like to say to the young people, if you, like I did, think that marriage is going to solve everything and you will celebrate 25 years without an argument, I'd like to just pass along something to you. It's going to be, if you will let it, it's going to be an event of an opportunity to wash each other's feet often. To be able to get anywhere near that kind of quota, it'll only come because I died to myself. But in our home, whether it's in our home, whether it's on my job, whether it's when you go to the grocery store, or when somebody pulls out in front of you in traffic, there's going to be an opportunity to esteem somebody else greater than ourselves. I desire your prayers.